Burton struggled to get up onto his feet. Nobody, not even God, was going to punch Richard Burton in the ribs and get away without a battle. God, ignoring the futile efforts, pulled a large gold watch from his vest pocket, unsnapped its heavy inscrolled gold lid, looked at the hands, and said, "Long past due." God held out his other hand, its palm turned up. "Pay up, sir, otherwise I'll be forced to foreclose." "Foreclose on what?" Darkness fell. God began to dissolve into the darkness. It was then that Burton saw that God resembled himself. He had the same black straight hair, the same Arabic face with the dark stabbing eyes, high cheekbones, heavy lips, and the thrust-out, deeply cleft chin. The same long, deep scars, witnesses of the Somali javelin which pierced his jaws in that fight at Berbera, were on his cheeks. His hands and feet were small, contrasting with his broad shoulders and massive chest. And he had the long, thick mustachios and the long, forked beard that had caused the Bedouin to name Burton the father of mustachios. "You look like the devil," Burton said. But God had become just another shadow in the darkness. Chapter 3 Burton was still sleeping, but he was so close to the surface of consciousness that he was aware that he had been dreaming. Light was replacing the night. Then his eyes did open, and he didn't know where he was. A blue sky was above. A gentle breeze flowed over his naked body. His hairless head and his back and legs and the palms of his hands were against grass. He turned his head to the right and saw a plain covered with very short, very green, very thick grass. The plain sloped gently upward for a mile. Beyond the plain was a range of hills that started out mildly, then became steeper and higher and very irregular in shape as they climbed toward the mountains. The hills seemed to run for about 2.5 miles. All were covered with trees, some of which blazed with scarlets, azures, bright greens, flaming yellows, and deep pinks. The mountains beyond the hills rose suddenly, perpendicularly and unbelievably high. They were black and bluish-green, looking like a glassy, igneous rock with huge splotches of lichen covering at least a quarter of the surface. Between him and the hills were many human bodies. The closest one, only a few feet away, was that of the white woman who had been below him in that vertical row. He wanted to rise up, but he was sluggish and numb. All he could do for the moment, and that required a strong effort, was to turn his head to the left. There were more naked bodies there on a plain that sloped down to a river perhaps 10 yards away. The river was about a mile wide, and on its other side was another plain, probably about a mile broad, and sloping upward to foothills, covered with more of the trees, and then the towering, precipitous black and bluish-green mountains. That was the east, he thought, frozenly. The sun had just risen over the top of the mountain there. Almost by the river's edge was a strange structure. It was a gray, red-flecked granite and was shaped like a mushroom. Its broad base couldn't be more than 5 feet high, and the mushroom top had a diameter of about 50 feet. He managed to rise far enough to support himself on one elbow. There were more mushroom-shaped granites along both sides of the river. Everywhere on the plain were unclothed, bald-headed human beings spaced about 6 feet apart. Most were still on their backs and gazing into the sky. Others were beginning to stir to look around or even sitting up. He sat up also and felt his head and face with both hands. They were smooth. His body was not that wrinkled, ridged, bumpy, withered body of the 69-year-old which had lain on his deathbed. It was the smooth-skinned and powerfully muscled body he had when he was 25 years old, the same body he had when he was floating between those rods in that dream. Dream? It had seemed too vivid to be a dream. It was not a dream. Around his wrist was a thin band of transparent material. It was connected to a 6-inch-long strap of the same material. The other end was clenched about a metallic arc, the handle of a grayish metal cylinder with a closed cover. Idly, not concentrating because his mind was too sluggish, he lifted the cylinder. It weighed less than a pound, so it couldn't be of iron, even if it was hollow. Its diameter was 1.5 feet, and it was over 2.5 feet tall. Everyone had a similar object strapped to his wrist.